Now, this brings us to the third question, which you may remember was, to what or to whom is religion necessary? And this perhaps is the most important of all the three questions, because it provides us with the key, with a clue, to the answer to our main question, that is religion necessary? Now I'm going to say something which may come as a surprise to you. That is, that religion isn't for everybody. Now we're brought up, of course, to think that religion isn't for everybody, that everyone must be saved. Jesus died for all that sort of thing. Religion is for everybody. That's why for hundreds of years missionaries have been sent forth to preach to the heathen, to convert them, to baptize them, to put trousers onto them, and all that sort of thing. Because they must all be saved. Religion is for everyone. So if one says, or if one suggests, that it isn't for everyone, then for whom is it? For whom is it not? Now let's begin by recalling our definition of religion. In the first place, religion consists in the attainment of a state of complete psychological and spiritual wholeness. Now this implies a conscious effort. You don't become psychologically and spiritually whole if you just allow yourself to drift along. Not even if you allow yourself to drift along, however regularly, to the Vihara on Sundays. You become psychologically and spiritually whole only with conscious, deliberate, willed, determined, regular, systematic effort or endeavor, right endeavor. Now conscious effort, deliberate effort of this sort is impossible without self-awareness or self-consciousness. One must have attained that. And it's this, in fact, which really distinguishes, one might say, man from the animals. In other words, it doesn't distinguish all men from the animals. One might even say that most people are really more animal than they are human, that they're animal rather than truly human. If one surveys the whole vast world of things, of living things, one sees that there are various grades of existence, that one can divide existence or existences in various ways, into various classes. First of all, the first great division, the non-living and the living. I'm not going now, of course, into the metaphysical question of whether everything is not in the ultimate sense living, even a stone, even a piece of marble, living. But just in an ordinary popular sort of scientific way, one can say that there are some things which are non-living things and other things which are living things. One can take the living things, one can divide them also into two classes. There's a class of living things which is merely sensitive, or the vegetable world. And then there's another class of living things, not only sensitive, but conscious, the animal kingdom. Now, conscious living beings can be further divided into two. You've got those living, sensitive beings who are not only conscious, but also self-conscious. So here's your twofold division, the conscious and the self-conscious. So evolution proceeds upwards through all these grades, from the non-living up to the living, from the sensitive to the conscious, from the conscious to the self-conscious. So man, we may say, cutting the whole thing rather short, man, we may say, is a conscious being in process of becoming self-conscious or self-aware. Now, one who has become self-aware, even intermittently self-aware, can strive to become psychologically and spiritually whole, not one who has not become self-aware or self-conscious. Now up to the level of consciousness, the process of evolution, we may say, is collective, and this is where automatic. It just goes on, irrespective of the individual effort made by the individual beings or existences, and therefore it's very slow. For the vegetable kingdom to evolve into the animal kingdom, we know it took millions upon millions upon millions of years. For the animal kingdom to evolve human beings, it took millions of years. And for human beings to develop from consciousness to a state of self-consciousness, self-awareness has taken. Not millions, but several thousands of years. And only a few have been able so to attain. And this attainment, this evolution, this higher evolution from the conscious to the self-conscious or self-aware, unlike the whole previous process of evolution in nature, is not collective and, as it were, automatic, but it's individual and proceeds only through deliberate individual effort, aware effort, self-conscious effort. And this, of course, is therefore much quicker. We can even say, or it has been said rather, that there's a greater difference between an enlightened man and an unenlightened man than between the unenlightened man and the animal. To go from the stage of animal to unenlightened man takes millions of years, or has taken millions of years. But to go from the stage of unenlightened man to enlightened man, representing an even greater difference, can take even only a few years if the right effort is put in. Now, religion, we recall, is the achievement of complete psychological and spiritual wholeness. And it's also the sum total of all those teachings, all those practices, which make this achievement of complete psychological and spiritual wholeness possible. So religion, therefore, is obviously only for those who have developed some degree, at least, of self-awareness, and who is the next stage of their evolution, higher evolution, feel the need of achieving this psychological and spiritual wholeness. In other words, religion is for those who in this context know that they don't know, that they haven't yet got this psychological and spiritual wholeness, that they don't yet know reality, who know that they don't know, and who want, one might even say desperately want, to know. So religion, therefore, is really for the minority. Not only now, not only in the midst of the 20th century, but even at any time. It's for the minority at least until such time as all members of the human race, all human beings, become more or less self-conscious, self-aware, which they certainly are not at present, as you know.